Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who like to take big pieces of wood and make them smaller. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
What's happening, everybody? It's episode number 546, and on today's show, we're talking about expired wood, barn inspiration, and personal responsibility in the maker community. I choke on that word. I wonder why. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler's been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before March 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. Do we ASMR read? This week, we like to thank Greg Snow, Eric Jenkins, Dennis Fontaine Jr., Matt Neglitch.
Oh man! Just when you're like lulled into a sense of security,
boom!
You're listening close, and then Matt punches you right in the earballs. I love it.
No relaxing for you.
All right, so Shannon, you want to talk about this Rockler gift card winner since you're the one who instigated this whole thing?
Yeah, sure. We had the one and only Kelly Lally that was the October winner of last year, who decided to send us a voicemail, and I'm not playing it, sorry. Because basically he said he bought some Bessie clamps. He went over to the Schaumburg, Illinois Rockler store and spent $250 on parallel clamps. I think he got some
50 inches. So he
bought a couple of them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, basically.
A pair of them.
He got some 50 inches all the way down to some 24 inches to hang on a shop wall. And that is one happy woodworker right there. So thanks, Kelly, for letting us know that it's not a big scam.
Yeah, really.
It's real money.
It's a little scam.
You get that gift card and they actually do honor it at checkout. That's what Rockler's all about, honoring their gift cards at checkout.
That's right.
It's one of their core values right there.
They do it and they do it well. I think if you get like found money in woodworking, that's one of the best places to put it is to like expensive
clamps,
sets of clamps.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's the one thing that hurts the most to pay for, I think.
But only once because you can reuse them.
That's true. You can.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. Well,
funny
it's a dining
works.
Table episode today.
And oh, no.
That means we're going to be talking about stuff that's tangentially related to woodworking. You know what? Some love it. Some hate it. I'll be honest. Some people hate this. Man, I'm sorry.
I like it.
But this is what we like to do. But we like it. Okay. This one I think is actually pretty good because it involves all of us in a way, whether you are a content creator or not. This is a question from Thomas. He says, for some time, I've had this thought and would like to hear your opinion about this. I think YouTubers and influencers should be aware of their potential impact and try to be pushing for positive change. Also, from an environmental point of view, there are so many videos and creators out there that I feel do not really live up to this. Disregarding the many blowing stuff up videos where I question that they did a thorough cleanup afterwards, even in the maker community, there is quite a room for improvement. And let's see, some random examples. I'll let you decide if you want to mention them publicly. I mean, these people made videos. It is what it is. I don't think we're not going to cast judgment on them in particular, but you're more than welcome to. we'll put these in the show notes. Idaho Painter, and I don't know who either of these people are. Idaho Painter washing his sprayer on the grass, so there would be paint residue permanently in the soil. BM Sculptures carving epoxy outside. Wonder where the dust flies. Even that whole epoxy trend in general probably has not a great footprint compared to regular wood. And so many channels use fancy exotic woods rather than promoting local woods that have not been transported that far and harvested sustainably. Sorry if that's a long rant. What do you guys think? Okay. This could be really complicated because a lot of times what we're talking about are people with an idea and a camera and a YouTube account. Right. And they just start talking about their thing. And then one thing leads to another. And suddenly this person has 100,000 followers. And they're still kind of just that like there isn't a transition that happens, at least for me, a transition that happens in your head that says suddenly, oh, I better take myself really seriously now. Like you still, if you go into it with that like low key kind of I'm just like an average person format, it's really hard to shake that. And I still have that happen today. I sprayed something outside. And I had at least three people take me to task for doing that. And it's like, well, you should have a spray booth if you're going to do that. Where is all that overspray going? And that's something, I mean, if I'm being honest, I've done that many times before. But now I'm at a commercial location and there's, you know, different responsibilities and expectations there. But I still, my mindset is like, dude, back off. I'm just a woodworker doing my thing, you know, like, but in reality, once you have a certain number of followers, is there an automatically applied responsibility to do the right thing? I'm going to say that in quotes because I think we all may have different versions of what that actually means, but to maybe do the obvious right things. So is that something that should happen automatically? What's the threshold? And is it something that everybody has to do no matter what? Like it gets hairy.
I mean, I think that's a really fine line. Like There's a lot of people out there now saying, well, I'm just one person, you know, how big of a difference am I going to make? And to me, the right thing there is to stop thinking that way, you know, but whether you're an influencer or not, like one person may not be able to make the difference, but they might, you know, it's got to start somewhere. So I think like in your instance, Mark, I know that you've had a real emphasis in the last, God, 5-6 years on low VOC finishes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're spraying outside, a more environmentally friendly finish, who cares, right? I mean, if
this
the
wasn't,
overspray,
by the way.
It wasn't, okay, fair enough, no. Fair enough.
But, this was you know, not, this was the exception to the last 5 or 6 years of finishes. I was doing someone a favor and I have no intention of installing a spray booth in this location, but I wanted this person to have that finish and outside was the only place that I could do it.
So it does beg the question, you know, how could you have done that better? You know, not cheaply, you know, involve building a spray booth or having a spray room with, you know, special filters and things like that to capture that. And, you know, so that's a very difficult thing to do. So the easier route is to go with a more environmentally friendly finish. But, you know, not throwing you under the bus by any means. I understand those situations come up so that, you know, we have to be cautious. My point is we have to be cautious of saying, you know, I'm just a single woodworker, you know. You spraying that non-environmentally friendly finish that afternoon, no, it's probably not going to make a massive difference. The fact that you have a lot of followers might make a massive difference, but that really shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter how many people are watching you, whether they're watching you or not. We should be thinking these things in the long run anyway.
So you got to think that no matter who you are, if you put a piece of content out there, there's always a potential for that to find its way in front of a lot of eyeballs. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you're putting the video out there and you go, well, you know what? I think I'm going to brush my hair just in case, you know, I'm putting this video out there. I don't know how many people, man, I'm going to brush my hair anyway. Right. Like that's the kind of thing you might think. And then it's like, well, then maybe you need to also apply that to safety precautions or environmentally friendly, you know, steps that you might take to make a more positive statement.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I have to think about when we record Wood Talk now. Like, now it's video.
I gotta get pretty anyway.
And stuff, you know? can't just roll out of bed like we would do when we record early on Saturday morning, you know? It's terrible.
Terrible.
I mean, Matt, do you give this stuff a lot of thought before you do something and film it?
No. No. I guess I'll be honest with you. I don't really think a whole lot about this. These are all good things to really think about, but it's not something that I have considered a whole lot. Because I think I tend to lean more towards the side of like just overall practicality. It's like, yeah. Especially in your case, I've done that plenty of times. I've sprayed stuff outside. That's like the perfect place to do it. Because why haven't I want that in the shop or in the house? Right?
Right. I feel right. Like I'd get more comments if I sprayed inside than if I sprayed outside. Yeah. But at the same time, the only thing I ever spray is a water-based finish or shellac. So it's alcohol-based and all natural shellac. Like how is that a bad thing? The overspray is a bad thing if I forget to pull my car out of the driveway. That's why it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, what is a water-based finish really going to be doing? I'm sure some chemists will pop in and say that can still be bad, but I absolutely wouldn't spray inside. Right. But also, Matt, I think like I'm trying to think of a time when you've actually done something. Well, let's use the wood thing, for example. Like you're on the other end of that spectrum. Like everything you do is locally sourced. You've sawn it yourself.
Yeah, I don't do that intentionally. Like I didn't like.
No,
I didn't start out with like the social mission of like, I got to stop imports and all of the fossil fuels that are burned to get that wood to me from across the world. Sure. It was a practical, this is cheaper. I'm frugal and I have access to all these things here locally. Why not just use available. These things
and a nice way of
cut the
it.
Wood however I want to cut the wood. I don't like that's how I went about it. Yeah. I understand that there are like these, there are these environmentally positive impacts of the things I'm doing with wood. I didn't set out to do that intentionally. I would never sell myself as someone who had done that because it's a happy accident, if anything, on that level of it. But yes, I guess I help out by not transporting wood very far.
You don't get those points.
I know.
Man. Sorry.
I don't need them.
Declined.
I'm fine.
Denied.
The fact that you move your patio furniture with a telehandler means that compromises. There's your offset right there.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, I could do other stuff like that.
I'm plenty of fossil fuels being burned at the Cremona Ranch. It's happening.
All that diesel.
Well, I think like this first came to my attention a long time ago with respect to safety. And it was something that I may have been like, you know, there's cuts. There are cuts that like, I feel comfortable doing this. I know it's going to go fine. I've done it enough times, but now I'm showing other people. And while I can say, hey, I've done this a lot, I have experience, I'm going to make the cut this way. The fact that you're doing it gives a newer woodworker the okay to also try it because eventually they want to be, you know, good enough to also be able to make that cut. So they have to start somewhere. They got to start by trying it. And then I, you know, would have someone take me to task for that. And I might provide resistance initially and just be like, dude, back off. You know, like I'm just trying to make a video and trying to teach here. But then over time, I started to realize, you know what? It sucks. It sucks because I didn't set out to be, you know, that type of person that like, I want to be the safety police here. I just wanted to do good woodworking. But then you do realize that whether you like it or not, you have put yourself in a position where you are responsible for influencing what people do. And if you're so inclined and you want to influence positive change, let's say the environmental stuff, that's kind of the icing on the cake, but you do have that power and influence. So I don't know that I would like these two examples we have here that I'd necessarily knock these guys for doing what they do. But I also think there's probably room for a lot of us to grow in how we approach these things and what we include in our videos. Just because we have an audience, whether we like it or not, that audience is there watching.
I think the safety side is something I actually pay attention to versus like this environmental stuff. Like I haven't really thought about a whole lot of environmental stuff, but the safety stuff is something that I've actually thought about because I think there's a lot more people that are like big on to safety than versus the people that are big on to environmental impacts of things. I'll hear from more people if I do something unsafe. But if I do something that's potentially environmentally dangerous,
it's like the more clear and present danger in what you're doing. And like the environmentally stuff is like a secondary, you know, effect that a lot of people aren't thinking about. I mean, generally speaking, we have a problem on the planet that needs to be addressed. I totally feel for that. But I guess maybe it's a little bit selfish that sometimes I go, Yeah, but my sister-in-law needs this table and she needs that finish to be on that table and I'd like her to be happy. You know what I mean? Which is probably not a very mature way to look at it.
I think it would be interesting, you know, kind of like when YouTube and various other platforms first came out and said, okay, if this is an ad, you have to disclose that it's an ad. You know, This was years ago now, and now it's become just kind of ubiquitous. You see the ad text or somebody, you know, says, okay, this was a sponsored post or whatever. I think it would be interesting to see a shift, speaking on the environmental side of things, where what's difficult there is there's so much gray area and there's so much misinformation that it'd be very difficult as you're at your typical content creator, or typical woodworker to actually know what is true, what is real.
Right.
You know, and I will lean into the third point about using fancy exotic woods. Thomas, who wrote this, says, you know, rather than promoting local woods that have not been transported that far and harvested sustainably. I think you're making a lot of assumptions there. Just because it's an exotic wood does not mean that it was harvested unsustainably. In fact, right. If it's made it into North America, the chances are that it was harvested sustainably because there is a hell of a lot of regulation that makes it very difficult to get a wood without a chain of custody into the country. So I think that is I know this because I work in the industry. I do this podcast about that. You should know that by listening to it. But the general populace doesn't necessarily know these things. And there is a stigma attached to exotic woods. And we're starting to see a stigma attached to epoxy as being an unenvironmentally friendly wood. What would be interesting is to see people who have actually maybe said, okay, now I'm going to do this. Let's make a disclaimer or let's do a little bit of research and say, okay, I looked at these. Obviously, this means more work on the influencer. But again, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. Let's quote Stan Lee here. This is one of those things where if you want to avoid people saying, look, you're doing something, you know, environmentally responsible, I think a little bit of research, just like we were saying, you know, you're forced into using a finish that may not be the best option. And you may say, look, I don't have an option, but here is an option that might, you know, here's a way that I could mitigate the hazards here. Or there is another alternative to this epoxy that I'm using. I wasn't able to get it, you know? And that's the thing that comes down to the exotic woods is, you know, let's rather than promoting local woods that have been transported real far, there's a lot of woodworkers I know out there who do not have a lumber yard less than 3 hours away. You know, so they use that lumber yard and they get what they can get. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have a bandsaw mill. They don't work at a lumber yard with 8 million board feet. You know, their options are pretty limited. So don't think that going to your Home Depot and buying wood from there is wood that was not transported from a long way away, folks. Right. That wood has come from a very long way away.
And it looks it. It looks
yeah, it. Exactly. So, you know, there sometimes isn't another option. In a perfect world, we would all be able to, you know, harvest our own wood and, I mean, and be Mac Cremonas of the world, you know? So
are you even a woodworker if you don't saw your own lumber?
Mm-mm, yeah. No, I always thought you had to cut your own mortise and tenons. If you didn't, then you weren't a woodworker.
That's right.
Episode 100 something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think if we can start thinking, and I realize by saying this, this is an extra step. This is extra work for people that are doing this, but I think it might be beneficial to start thinking in terms of, you know, I recognize that this could be done better, or here is an alternative. You know, if you can get that alternative, like if you can find a better environmentally responsible epoxy and you can get it, then make an effort to use it. You know, if you're using an exotic wood, then take some time to figure out where that exotic wood came from and why you're using it. You know, I mean, there sometimes from a design perspective, that's the best way to go about it. Could you have found a better, more environmentally responsible wood? I don't know. I can tell you from speaking with inside the industry that, you know, a lot of the exotics are harvested incredibly sustainably. And a lot of the exotics that are, you know, listed on CITES and things like that are not even close to endangered. You know, they're politics and everything. So be careful of assumptions that you make. And I think the more we as creators or woodworkers can do a little bit of research, and you might find that what I'm doing is actually quite environmentally responsible, you know, or the parts per million of cancerous stuff in the epoxy that I'm using is actually already controlled because there already are regulations called TSCA or CARB 2 that limit those types of things anyway at the original manufacturer level. So I am really cautious to immediately start pointing fingers and saying that's bad, because in order for that product to be on the market, there's a lot of regulation already in place. And you might be surprised how environmentally friendly that unfriendly product in your hand actually is. So be cautious of the assumptions that you make. Recognizing I work with the lumber industry and I'm getting all excited about this. But just when I've dug into it a little bit more, I've realized that some of this stuff has already happened. You know, the Toxic Substance Control Act, or TSCA Title VI, has been in place for 3 years. And the California Air Resources Board 2 and 1 have been in place for 10 years. These control the emissions and the toxic substances in the products that we use, from finishes to wood to plywood to flooring. It's been around a long time. And if there's a product on the market, it probably already had to adhere to that. And there's a bunch of other things that I'm not familiar with, other regulations and acts that do make it environmentally friendly. So, you know, it goes both ways, folks. You know, be sure that you're doing environmentally responsible, but don't be so quick to point a finger and say what you're doing is environmentally unresponsible.
And it's tricky too, because you're saying people should maybe take that next step of doing that little bit of extra research. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? People don't even do, like, they're not even good at disclosing advertising, right?
Fair
like
enough,
they yes, can't no. even do that. Yeah. And you expect them to do something that's good for the environment by doing more research? Like,
and moreover,
I don't know that that's going to happen.
Say you're a YouTuber and you do that, and then you're looking at your analytics and you're saying, oh, this is when everybody's tuning out. Like, so now I'm going to cut. I mean, let's play the game. You know,
YouTube nobody wants to hear
business.
It.
Nobody wants to hear you saying I'm being environmentally. Oh, look at this blowhard, you know, unsubscribe or stop watching. Yeah. And you see, I mean, YouTube gives us, if you're not familiar with the back end of things, it shows you very clearly where the drop off was in there. And you can see exactly when people stop watching. And more than likely, that's what you're going to see. So what are you going to do next time? You're not going to do it. You know, you're not going to talk about that.
Let me ask you guys this question, because I've been kind of thinking about this. I do have the video content of me making a table and receiving that finish. It was finished outside. It was two coats and the entire thing was outside. So in the video, I now have a choice to make and I do plan to address it. It's just the question of, like, should I show it at all? Because if I don't show it, then I'm going through this whole build and there won't be an ending with regard to seeing. It's like, I'm going to apply this finish. The finish is applied, you know, like it's going to just drop off, but I have the footage
part of the story.
It's a real important part. So I'm kind of torn on, do I want to post this? And with the caveat being, hey, look, I've given this a lot of thought since then. And if I had a chance to do this again, I might do things differently, because it's not good to do what I did, but show it. But thereby even showing it at all is still in a way telling people, here's one way that you could do this. If you don't give a crap, you could just do it this way. But I'm torn, because the video kind of falls apart if I don't have that included in it.
See, I think, and this is me, my personal opinion at this point, I honestly don't know what the alternative would be other than choosing a more environmentally friendly,
completely
finish.
Different finish. Telling my sister-in-law she cannot have the finish that I know she wants.
So what I would like to see, I say leave it in, but if you were to put, like, you know, voiceover or whatever there, and you were able to determine, like, this would be a better way to do this, like, what are the pros out there saying you need a spray booth, right? I guess.
Yeah.
What does that mean? For me, I would like that as an opportunity to educate, because I honestly don't know, like, how, if I'm forced to using this finish, and of course I'm not going to spray a nasty finish indoors. Yeah. Of course I'm going to spray it outdoors. And I guarantee you, a large part of the people are like me. They don't even know what you're doing is wrong. They know it as, oh, he went outside. That's smart. Like, you know, that way he doesn't blow himself up or, you know, breathe in these nasty fumes.
Right.
You're wearing a respirator. So, okay, he's doing the right thing. I would not have looked at that and said, that's a bad thing. I would have looked at it and said, he's doing the right thing. And then you look a little closer and go, okay, well, yeah, he's spraying, you know, a nasty finish.
Bit of a problem.
Into the air. So here's an opportunity. Yes, folks, I know I'm doing this wrong. Way I should do this is constructive. If you have a solution, I would take that opportunity to say it. And then, you know, the caveat, obviously I didn't do this. This is, you know, I was time crunched. I probably should have done it. You can admit to the fact that I know that I was doing something wrong. Here's what I should have done. Because then at least you're educating and people now may think twice, because idiots like me are thinking, hey, he's spraying outside. Good job, man.
Way to go, Mark. Nicely done.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, when I think about spray booths too, And this is a lack of knowledge on my part. I mean, I've worked in a place with a spray booth once, and I don't know too much about it. But aren't they generally mostly just capturing the liquid particulate and overspray? And that it's really exhausting the VOCs into the environment anyway.
Yeah. I mean, like I have one of the Rockler finishing tents, link included in the show notes. Uh-huh. Does that count? Like I bought that mainly to control.
It's containing your overspray. Right. That's about it, right?
I bought it to like keep it in the shade so it doesn't cure too fast in the sun and to keep wind down, you know? That was the whole reason I bought it. But I guess technically the overspray is sticking to the walls of that tent.
So is that our concern about off-gassing. The overspray, or are we concerned about the VOCs?
Right. Well, I mean, it's still off-gassing.
That's the thing.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Well, here's another thing.
Concerned about.
Some of this comes down to the fact that I have a commercial location and it's a bit of a liability for me to even put this out in public because that probably is not to code locally and that there are rules and regulations for how I apply finishes, which is why I don't apply those finishes. But there's probably a rule that states, regardless of what's better or worse for the environment, there's probably a rule that says what I need to do to contain that stuff. And whether it's just as bad because the VOCs still fly out of vent as opposed to just going, you know, out of the gun and into the air, I almost think there's a part of that that doesn't even matter because there's rules that I should have been following. But like when it comes down to it, I'm not really sure. The place in Arizona I used to work, it just had filters that caught the overspray.
That's all I was seeing. They're not running the air through the carbon filters.
Yeah, before it's just going straight out the roof.
The VOCs
are going out there anyway
before it goes out the tube.
Yeah.
Huh.
But so that's all a way of saying, I don't know. I don't know for sure.
Right. So again, it goes back to the opportunity to educate. We don't know. Maybe that's what we need more of. Like the people who are chiming up in the comments or whatever and saying that, you know, is environmentally responsible. I throw it back to you, like educate us dumb woodworkers. Cause we don't know.
Well, and ultimately that's why for me, it's easier because I don't want to do the spray booth thing. I don't necessarily want to be liable for everything that goes along with that. So we're trying to do all natural, no VOC hand applied finishes because guess what? Doesn't create any problems for me at all.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, you know, generally going to be safe. All right. Well, that's interesting. That was a good conversation.
I learned a whole bunch of stuff I don't know anything about. It's perfect.
And that you're awful for the environment. You learned that as well.
I sprayed a trailer outside. Conversion paint.
Yeah. Do you remember we talked about that with him out there getting red paint all over him?
That's right.
Good times. Matt, don't get
crap. Apparently not. I was almost shitting. I'm like, God, I'm smart. I'm doing this outside.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Like, it must be good.
The right thing.
Yeah.
Here.
I'm doing the right thing. Yeah. When I used to spray lacquer, I would just like do it in front of the garage door. Overspray goes out the door and then you close the door and the project dries inside.
Yeah, with a fan behind you, so it really blows out the garage door. Yeah, right? Yeah.
You know, you're being smart.
Exactly.
Matt just don't give a crap.
I'm just more confused now than ever.
Right. Yeah.
Just keep doing what you're doing until the trolls come find you.
And oh, they're coming. Apparently, they're coming for me. They have some questions like, "What do I do here?
They hear the steps.
Help me here.
Yeah. Let me know.
Actually be insightful. Don't be just judgmental. Be actually like helpful."
Yeah, nice. I guess that's the thing, right? Like when you really look at Thomas's email, it's almost just like a do better, but there's so much there. It's so much more subtle. There's more work involved. It's more complex than just do better. I mean, this is a medium that allows anybody to publicly go and throw this information out there. So it's really hard to regulate this. Like I said, you can't even get people to disclose ads. Good luck getting them to research something they don't care about. And then convey that to people. Like it's going to be a challenge moving forward. But I do appreciate that email, Thomas. Thank you for sending that in.
I'm going to include CITES paperwork in all of my videos going forward and chain of custody documents that show where all my wood came from.
Good idea.
I think it'll be a good educational point for people to see just how many documents and just to see how my subscriber numbers fall off. It's going to be interesting.
That'll be good.
Guarantee you it's going to be a downhill trend, not an uphill trend.
Awesome. All right. Well, there's no tie-in here for Rockler, so I'm just going to start reading.
You know who else subscribers are falling off? No, that'd be bad.
No. I was going to say, you know who else sells stuff that's bad for the environment? I'm like, no. that's not going to work out.
They sell spray booths. I bought one.
The picture on the box is some lady spraying outside.
Exactly.
Right. That's right.
Right.
I don't know. All right, let's just get into it. Bachler's mini deluxe panel clamps bring you all the benefits of their popular larger deluxe panel clamps, but in a smaller package, optimized for scaled down projects like cutting boards, small to medium sized panel glue ups, and assembling frame and panel doors. Since the clamps sandwich your panel, they force the panel flat and the joints flush. Woohoo, we got a visual.
The big box.
Saving you loads of sanding time. That's the deluxe version. Oh, is that the, you have the mini deluxe? I can't see the whole video.
No, it's the deluxe. Yeah, it's that's so the regular big, deluxe. It doesn't fit in frame.
No, oh, there you go. That's awesome. So there's a... This is great. This is all good. The audio people love this. There's also no need to stagger your clamps top.
Right.
There is still an audio show, guys.
I forgot about that.
Settle
now
down.
Now I'm so used to this video thing.
I'm just going to do an ASMR thing of the squeaky box sound right up close to the microphone.
There you go.
That'll be good,
squeak,
too.
Squeak, yeah. Squeak.
Perfect. There's also no need to stagger the clamps. I do that all the time. Top and bottom. You could use them for panels from 1/2 inch to 1.5 inch thick and up to 16 inches wide. You can find them at Rockler stores and at rockler.com. Now, we've actually been making a lot of scrap wood cutting boards with our scraps because it's, you know, something to do. Really environmentally friendly to do instead of burning them, right? To create a thing out of them? Who wouldn't do that? That's just the smart thing to do because I'm responsible.
You can also create a steak with them, though. You know, cutting board or steak.
You could. But even steak is not good for the environment. You know, okay, what cattle chicken is doing to this country?
It's true. Number one causer of deforestation on the planet.
See? And all not the farting lumber, that folks, those cows are cows doing? Telling you, man. What do you got? They got like 16 stomachs. They're farting constantly. It's a lot of methane.
All right. So
going
chicken
into the environment.
Grilled chicken.
A I nice do like halibut watching. A lovely I like halibut watching people walk behind Matt. This is,
yeah, it's pretty fun, fun, you know. All the guest appearances. See pancakes okay you walk by too.
Yep. Good old pancake. Oh, I want some pancakes now.
Pancake.
It's cool. Not let's true just end the show here and go have some I don't wanna, breakfast don't food.
Eat. Yeah, let's go to Waffle House or something. That'd be good.
See you in a bit.
Okay. So
Rockler ad.
Here's
Rockler
the thing.
Ad.
Rockler ad.
Oh, we're still doing that?
I actually, oh, back to the cutting boards. We are doing a lot of these cutting boards and kind of in his spare time. That's what Jason is doing. Just picking up the scraps, planing them down, getting them down to a consistent size. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Those would be awesome. Like when you have these little panel clamps, if you guys haven't seen these, by the way, they are the kind that not only are putting the pressure where you expect it from side to side, but you have the bars coming down and squeezing from the top and the bottom, which kind of completely negates the need for calls or any kind of, I don't know, maybe dowels or dominoes or anything to keep things level. It just kind of sandwiches it all as you clamp things together. So really, really great stuff. Check them out. And if you don't want to make the little tiny ones, you got the ones that Shannon just showed you, the big deluxe versions, the larger ones. I guess they're all called deluxe, but the bigger ones, the non-mini ones. So hold on, got a burp. Okay.
I also have a YouTube video to show you how to make your own shop version of them if you're just too cheap to spend any money at all.
What a jerk. Who would do that during an ad?
What?
I know.
For a product. Why would you
what's
even
the
do that
with you?
Because it's I got to tick somebody off in every show. It's part of my contract.
Ideally, not the sponsor.
Well, you do the first time.
Way to go, Shannon. Ignore what he said. Don't go this make guy them because they're going to work terribly. Guy. You got to go to Rockler to get the ones that actually work. That's at true Rockler stores and at rockler.com.
They certainly shed glue better than the wooden ones I made.
I know they do. That's just one of the 10 reasons why you shouldn't build your own.
And they're blue, my favorite color.
And they're blue.
Blue helps.
All right, Shannon. Why don't you get that first question here? We actually only have two more questions for the rest of the show.
I will read this question as long as Matt can pronounce the name of the guy who wrote it.
Pancake.
Right there. Right here, Matt.
I see it.
Okay. He's from Slovakia, if that helps. You pull out your pronunciation Vojto guide. Say that again.
Vojto?
Okay, I'm going to go with that. Matt's the official
pronunciator.
Don't
even know? I'm going to say it's Vojto. I think the J is silent.
Yeah,
is
we're going to go with that. Vojto. Vojto.
Okay.
Vojto. Vojto. Maybe, no, that sounds
what
Portuguese.
What are you doing?
You're now from Portugal. I'm sorry to say you're from Portugal now. So
how
anyway,
many people
he says,
are trying to offend in this show?
What's wrong with the Portuguese?
One per show.
Why are
one
you insulting the Portuguese?
Well, he's from Slovakia. I don't think it's insulting to be from Portugal, but to move him from Slovakia to
Good keep Lord. Going, Shannon. Keep going.
Off the rails. Completely gone.
Would you like a shovel for the other hand too, or is one okay?
No. One of my favorite pro cyclists is from Slovakia, so there we go. I have great respect.
All my best friends are Slovakians, okay?
Yeah. Two of them. We're gonna move on now. We're gonna get to his question. He says, let's see, can a piece of wood be spoiled besides the usual rot or bugs? Can it have too much or too little moisture? For context, I bought a 3 to 4 inch thick oak rough sawn board. It's been sitting outside in a large stack for many years. I picked a board from the middle of the stack since there was no tarp over them. At least it had sticks between to separate the layers. Besides some split ends, it looks okay. I used my scrub plane to remove the dry wood from top and it looks fine, but I did read a few comments on the internets in the sense that the wood is already done for. I'm slowly working my way to the middle of the stack for my project, and I just want to make sure my efforts are not in vain. So I've heard this sentiment elsewhere too. And no, I don't think wood has an expiration date by any means. There are certainly a lot of things that can cause wood to rot. A lot of variables in play. First and foremost, the species that you're talking about. He says oak. He doesn't say white oak or red oak or bog oak or whatever. Some of those species are going to be more weather resistant than others. You know, it's untarped out there, so it could have a lot of moisture in it. But is moisture necessarily bad? Yes, it can actually rot a board from the inside out, but that process can take a very, very long time. That also will depend heavily on the species, how dry it was, whether it was felled in the spring, whether it was felled in the winter. There's so many different variables, but ultimately a board that has been dried, even if it was kiln dried and you stick it outside, it's still going to absorb and shed moisture. And that's not a bad thing. The bugs could be more of an issue. I think that's the more present danger, is if there are actually like bore holes and little active sawdust piles that say there's bugs in there. But I don't think your work will be in vain. I think it's important to just kind of keep an eye out as you're pulling these boards out. And if you're running into kind of soft and punky areas of the wood, then yes, there may be some more rot present. Does that mean you ditch the whole stash entirely? No, you probably can cut around those. Or if you don't care about the environment, stabilize it with epoxy, apparently.
You want to be evil?
Right. But
UCPES.
Spalted wood is actually the beginning of rot in a lot of woods, and that's sold for a higher price. So you might actually have more valuable wood if it's got some rot in it. The entire reclaimed wood market is capitalizing on the fact that this wood is hundreds, 300s of years old, and it's either been sunken in a river or it was used in a water tank or a pickle tank or something like that. Wood will last a very, very long time, to the point where if it lasts long enough with the right climate environment, it will turn into stone, i.e. the petrified forest. Where is that? In Arizona somewhere? Somewhere down there.
I think so.
So I don't think the wood is already done for. I don't really think there's such a thing. Now, I'm not going to deny that it can rot, certainly. But you have stacked and stickered this. I would recommend, if you can, put a tarp over it, or at least put a cover over it, just to keep some of the major amounts of water off of it. But ultimately, you won't really know until you start working it. And if it's working fine, then don't overcomplicate it. Keep working.
Keep working it, baby.
Keep working. Just working it.
Nice. I have nothing to add.
What?
Matt's in a dance break right now. So
yeah, you always have something to add.
Not today.
Certainly can't take anything away, that's for sure.
I'd like to add some food to my stomach.
Stay quiet. Beans, maybe?
Yeah. Love some good Franks and beans.
Yeah, this question is from Frank. This is directly to me. Matt, how are you?
You?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. I'm also good. Thank you for asking. Longtime listener to the podcast. First time sending a question, I think. Anyways, I was just checking out your barn video, or at least the latest summary, and I was wondering how much influence from other YouTubers you had in your planning and from whom. Frank goes on to ask about the cameras and equipment I use. We talked about that, I think, 6 episodes ago or something like that.
Why do you keep getting those questions?
Because I'm an amazing filmmaker. My cinematography is next level.
Is that what it
world.
Is?
I don't know.
I watched
know.
A video and it was like, it was a camera from 20 feet away and you and Donovan talking to each other. I'm like, this is riveting.
He's got a style, Mark.
How
does
he do it?
How does he do it?
I mean, it must be good. I haven't seen all the videos. You're obviously doing something right. But
people seem to like those. I'm happy that people like them because they were a hell of a lot of work to make. So
I'm
happy with that. But okay. I wanted to reach the last little bit because there's actually a question for Mark here.
Ah, crap.
Frank asks, you know, when am I going to officially replace Mark as the Wood Whisperer? I know he needs to choose a replacement soon before the old age gets to him. Ask him about that time. I was supposed to visit him in his Arizona shop before the move, and he gave me the address of his mom's house instead. That is a fantastic way to dodge somebody.
I have to remember that. I gave you an
address. I just don't happen to be there right now.
I did do that. It's great. Man, I don't like people coming to my house. That's what it is.
Send them to your mom's house.
Hey, look, my mom's a tough chick. You do anything wrong, she's going to mess you up. She could take care of herself. So she had all the goods at the time. So sometimes if it was like a Wood Whisperer thing, she would get connected to someone. And I'm like, look, if you want to have people come to your house, I wouldn't recommend it. But if you want to do it, then do your thing. So yeah, that's why that happened. But anyway, sorry, not to make it about me. I don't know. Matt's not that much younger. And in woodworking years, he's definitely not that much younger. Look at him. Looks like an old man over there. Just look at him.
I'm just getting my first grays now. You know, I'm going to look like that in like a year.
Wow. I don't know, man. You got more kids than I do. I think you're on the accelerated aging path.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not going to take long.
The fortunate thing is we've chosen a career path that it's not like, you know, pro sports where you have to retire in your 30s, you know.
Right.
Woodworkers retire much, much further. You've got a much longer career. So I think there's still time.
I don't plan on retiring. I mean, do either of you plan on retiring in the traditional sense of like what you're doing now? You just stop.
When I retire, I get to do
more. What else am I going
to
do?
Right. Like, seriously, what if you wanted to do something else? Like, I don't know. If you love what you do, the shop, the woodworking, like I always see that as it's just part of who I am. I think the storytelling about the woodworking will change over time, and how much I do it, where I do it, and what I say when I do it will definitely change depending on how much I feel like I need to continue to make money from it.
Right.
But outside of that, I still continue, I plan to continually, as long as I'm physically able, get my butt out into the shop and I'm doing something. I can't imagine never doing that.
Yeah. Just think of all the great content you can create to actually assess the heirloom quality of your furniture. When the furniture is now 40 and 50 years old, now you can revisit things and say, see, told you I built it right.
It's kind of funny if you think about that though. Like how is that, right? That was a good one. I guess it's being done now in droves. Like everybody's building stuff, documenting it, and then time progresses. But it's a really unique situation, I think, to be able to say, like, in 2006, this thing was built, it was documented, that thing is still around 40 years later, and here's the condition it's in. Like, if Norm did that with, like, all his projects, like, let's go back and see what they look like today. I just think that's super cool. It's a cool way to document it.
Okay.
All right, what was this question about? did you answer anything? It was for you. Why are we talking about me?
I just let you roll with it. That was good. You took us right back to the retirement discussion we had like eight episodes ago, whatever that was.
Right.
It was good.
I think that was like 2 years ago, man.
Talk about your barn, man. Answer Frank's question. Probably.
It was a while ago. I mean, it was definitely more than 4 or 8 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Poor Frank. Can't get his question answered.
I'm trying to dodge him. You already dodged him. You know, it's
I already did once.
So I picked this question, well, besides the fact that you have to think about Mark, but because I don't think people quite understand like how little planning went into this building. this is not something that I have been thinking about for years. Like, for my own like dream shop and for a lot of other people's dream shops, it's something you think about and you like develop the idea and the concept over years and years and years of thinking and like looking at other people's buildings and other people's documentation of their build and what they did and what that person did over here. And can you do something different or what makes more sense for you? This was literally like a, well, crap. I guess we need a building now. when can we start? That's kind of how that went down. And there wasn't a whole lot of like, let me go on the internet and spend a few months or a few years trying to come up with a perfect solution for something. I don't even know what's going to work or what's not going to work. So this was,
you didn't study our buildings videos for a year.
I've been watching like Kyle and Greg put up stuff and do buildings, but like I didn't really understand the context of it. So I learned quite a lot in the process of building it to actually be able to understand what the hell they're showing in their videos now, which is a good thing. But it's not like I was going online like, oh, let me like find this perfect looking shop that I really want to build for myself. It was like, okay, I need a box with a roof on it. And Lindsay said it has to have two roof pitches and look like the other barn. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally a month. 1 month of planning of like looking, going out into the world and finding what kind of building kits we can get, what will actually work for lead times, and then ordering stuff. 1 month.
I was going to say, it's not about reinventing the wheel. Like, you bought a kit, you know,
right.
And then you had Donovan there who, you know, knows what he's doing from a, you know, actual building perspective.
Yeah, a lot of that, like,
he's a real woodworker.
He is actually
like the rest of us.
Big woods. Yeah. A lot of the decision making process was like, what kind of kit can we get in the amount of time that we need to actually get here, so we can build this thing before the snow was everywhere. That was a lot of like, that's all we really did was like, okay, can we find a Gambrel barn kit from somebody anywhere and have it here like end of August, early September. So we have like a month, month and a half to get it put up before the weather goes to crap mid-October. That's literally it.
That's basically it everywhere. Like the conversations I have with my customers is, you know, they usually call with a particular species in mind. They usually have some sort of like, you know, cut list or linear foot list or square or whatever. And the conversation that usually starts is, when do you need it? That's the most important part. Yeah. Like, price is like way down the list. Like, how much do you want to spend? Because more importantly is, when do you need it? Like, you know, okay, well, if you need it that fast, I can't do it in that species. What I recommend is this species. And suddenly the original order changes, all dependent upon like when you need it, like how fast do you need to put it up? That's the number one thing, especially this day and age with supply chain still being an issue.
Like, Mark, when you put up your building in Arizona, how much time do you spend like thinking about the design?
Probably not enough. I mean, most of my challenge, because in Arizona, in that neighborhood, to build the shop, a barn wouldn't suffice.
Right.
It had to be built like a home with no internal dividing walls. So most of it was like, let's just like try to afford this, first of all, construct it so that the HOA is happy, get the setbacks correct. And then everything else was like, well, I didn't really have too many decisions to make outside of things like, how many fans do I want? Where do I want the lights? Where do I want the outlets? And that's all stuff that I kind of could figure out and sketch out on paper. And it was mostly just a lot, right? Like, get more than I think I'm going to need. But I was very non-committal with it because I was apprehensive about being too committal and making mistakes. So that was one of my challenges with that space, was because I didn't make enough decisions ahead of time. I was open, like in this one big open building, and didn't do anything with it because I was kind of afraid to subdivide the space to actually utilize it, right? So, yeah, I mean, that might be a unique case, but I'm pretty well known for not doing a whole lot of research for things before jumping into it. Especially if it means watching YouTube videos.
It's part of my brand to not know what I'm doing.
Jump in and whatever.
Just kind of wing it and see what happens.
I think from the content creation perspective, like, Matt just went Hollywood. He just threw a bunch of cameras at it and just said, let the editors figure it out.
Unfortunately, he was the editor.
Yeah. You know, you're no different than Spielberg or Michael Bay or anything. You just throw 20 cameras at it and get them all rolling. I don't
have quite that many explosions, so...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Maybe not Michael Bay, but
yeah,
still, just throw a bunch of cameras at it and piece it together.
I will say, before I went into this mess, this firehouse thing, I did watch Johnny Brooks' series on his building. Because there was just like, old building, okay, check, got that. Environmental hazards, check, got that. And it was just like, he's had to do way, way more to his space than I have to do here. But it was something where I wanted to just kind of, I guess, orient my brain for the renovation as opposed to the building new process and the sure. renovation process, especially on an older building. I just wanted to see like things that I might confront as I was doing this. And I actually was enjoying his series on that. But I would call that about the extent of my research that I did for this. So, yeah, good stuff. All right. I think that's probably going to do it for us. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Very nice.
Woo.
And I have to say, based on a lot of the comments we get lately about, boy, I wish they, is this still a show about woodworking? We did talk about woodworking yet again, a couple of times on this show. And, you know, these dining table episodes kind of can go a little off the rails. But I also must add that the topics have been submitted by you, the listeners. So, yeah.
Blame yourself.
Actually, yes.
If you don't like what we're talking about, go to woodtalkshow.com and submit what you want us to talk about, and we might consider it. That's how it works.
We don't have a team meeting about topics for this thing. We go and look at the email, pick an email, and we talk about it.
Yeah. So there we go. We happen to have a couple of good woodworking questions this this week and last week. So we will talk about woodworking if you submit woodworking questions. We'll talk about content creation if you submit content creation questions.
Oh, boy.
Although that's kind of run its course now. So we're hoping maybe more woodworking. So the point is, you guys decide what we talk about on the show by sending us topics at woodtalkshow.com or via email at woodtalkshow@gmail.com or over on Instagram at woodtalkshow. And as always, this is an audio podcast. It's also a YouTube channel. You might be watching us on YouTube right now, in which
look
case,
at me.
Hi.
Look at
thanks
me.
For watching us on YouTube. Hit that like button and subscribe. Todd, can you throw a little like ding into my teeth right there when I do that?
Probably.
Like and subscribe.
On screen.
He will. You know? He'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, thanks to Margaret, who handles the social media. Thank you to Nick for dealing with all of our audio issues. And Todd, dude, props.
Tearing it ups
for putting together this mess and making it into a watchable show. So if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it now, right now.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for listening
into this whole thing already. Go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now
it's
that you're done.
A whole new experience.
Go watch the other thing. It's funny too. I will tell you, they get edited differently. So Todd is a little bit more particular than Nick is. And I haven't asked Nick to do any of this stuff, but Todd goes in, he removes pauses. So all those times where Matt is thinking that he's about to talk and it takes 5 seconds for it to go from his brain to his lips.
Thank you, Todd.
It's making it look better.
Look at that.
He cuts out the crap. And actually the runtime ends up being shorter than the audio.
Oh boy.
The
video is
quite
15
funny.
Minutes shorter. Yeah.
Yeah, just taking out the pauses. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and watching. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
It's like a special edition, like cut of like just woodworking questions. No content creation questions at all in this whole episode.
Yeah. No.
No.
Let's not do that.
Not doing versions.
No. 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 No.
No. No. No. No. No. No.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.